I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hey, everybody, it's Lauren Kling. Welcome back to another episode of AfterBuzz Presents What We Do in the Shadows, Season 2. I am joined, as always, with my co-host, Kevin. How are you, Kevin?
Hello, I'm well, and I'm ready for a night at the theater.
Yes. I have to ask you, where did you find that outfit?
I borrowed it from a friend of mine who is a druid. He can turn into an owl. And okay. He also has quite the affinity. His name is Shadwick Ebbets. He has quite the affinity for costuming as well as nocturnal activities. And I said I needed an outfit for the French theater, and he generously provided. The beard is mine, though. I've been spending our time off while we've been hiding in the dark, as vampires are wont to do, to really get in touch with my vampire self, which means I grew a beard.
Yes, and me too. I think I grew my, that's why I grew my beard out, so we could be compatriots. Is that the right word? I feel like that doesn't sound right. Comrades.
Brethren.
Brood. Sure. Yes.
Brood? Is that it?
Sure, why not?
If you're in the chat, know the proper term for vampire fraternity is, let us know.
Yes. Is it really a fraternity of two? It's two people. It's really not that much.
I mean, a coven has to start somewhere.
So we will cover the theater in episode 10, but let's start with episode 9, Witches. I think all season we were talking about the fact that we hadn't seen witches. I was excited when I finally saw that this was coming up. What were your thoughts on this episode?
That Billie Jean was right. And honest to goodness, as soon as you mentioned that we were going to cover witches first, she popped on the chat and introduced herself. I saw it happen.
Great.
So
welcome,
I think
Billie Jean.
She is in the know.
Yes.
And possibly a witch herself.
Possibly. Interesting. Yeah. All right. So we start off the show with Nandor calling a house meeting, tells Naja that he's given Guillermo a day off per week and 15 minutes every 4 hours. So with these episodes, these last two episodes, Guillermo's kind of had enough. And so yeah. I'm wondering, are you surprised it took this long for Guillermo to finally put up some ground rules?
I am, because the reason I finally decided, oh, he's never going to change, was because it was taking forever. I assumed if he was going to stand up for himself, he would have done it by now. So it'll likely never happen. But as we'll see throughout the course of our discussion, I am wrong about every prediction I make. He finally did stand up to himself, and he's treating his job like a real job, in that he has days off and breaks and kind of like union rules, but also in that he doesn't care about it anymore.
Yes. Which is good, it can be good and bad. You give up on having a job you love, but he's doing a job he wants to do, because what he really wants to do is he wants to be a vampire. So he hasn't fully given up that idea, even though he's a vampire killer. He also wants to be a vampire.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Like, I recall the moment where Black Peter had zapped everybody away to the ritual. And Nadia's like, oh, we have to find him. Guillermo, help. And he's just chewing on gum, looking at his phone, like, that's not my description. Like, he's so not part of being a familiar anymore.
Right.
And maybe now that he's gotten some leverage over Nandor, he will continue to use that leverage and become a full-fledged vampire.
Yeah. So with this episode, of course, you can't just have witches come and grab the Staten Island vampires. They have to bring in a goat, because you know that's the way it goes. You bring in a goat who's come out of this bright orange bulb, and then you bring, that's how you get the vampire to transport. On Star Trek, I don't know why they never thought of that, using a goat as a transport vehicle. Or actually, isn't the goat more like a welcoming, like Mr. Rourke from Fantasy Island?
I saw him as a lure, you know, to trap them onto the fishing line that is whatever spell they cast.
Why a goat would be the lure for a vampire is maybe a story we haven't yet discovered yet.
Well, I think it's just that he's the witch's familiar. It didn't have to necessarily be anything
True.
In particular, but that was his task, was to go fetch the vampires, or at least get them outside.
True. Oh, yeah, that's a really good point. So Laszlo is taken first, and then we see them come back for the others. Nandor is taken because he's an idiot. And it's funny, you really do. I always see the I always see Naja as the smart one in the room with.
And no, you finish the thought before I.
She's
completely...
the smart one in the room. And I don't know why Three's Company came into my mind, but could perhaps it be the three people that live together and Naja's the smart one and the other two guys are the dumb ones?
So usually that's just because of like that whole just it's on the same vein as toxic masculinity, where it's just these guys, because they're men and they're men from the old world, they have to have this larger than life persona. They're vampires. Like everything about them suggests they should have an important self image. And because they live in Staten Island in this little shack, essentially, right. Like, and they're dejected by their own community, they just kind of bluster about to stroke their own ego. And the witches are going to do that for them later. Whereas Nadia, being a woman from the old country, is not have to put on so much air. Mm-hmm. She's a little more grounded, and she calls them out on every time that they just act like idiots for the sake of being big tough guys or whatever.
Yeah.
But this episode, it's interesting because she was like superstitious about witches, which is something I've never really known her to be before. With Laszlo's hat, she hates the hat, but it was never like this. It's bad. Like, well, that is bad luck, but not in a way that's like, oh, it's the cause of all of our problems because they're out to get us, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the episode, we realize that it's not her being superstitious; it's that she has a feud with the head of their coven. That's, you know, it's the old world style of like her being, I don't want to use the word hysterical, but being out of her own wits because this woman has encroached on her territory through Laszlo.
Right.
You know, so this is her moment where she lets the world get the better of herself.
Right. And that's the whole thing, is the witches need semen in order to maintain their youthful appearance. Mm-hmm. And this has been going on since back when Naja and her became fast friends. but I love how Nandor and Laszlo look at it so differently than how we might perceive it. We think that these guys have been taken, witches are going to kill them. Oh, the horror. Guillermo and Colin and Naja are there to rescue them. Mm-hmm. But they're looking at it as, oh, here's a chance for us to get huge hard-ons.
At first they thought they were in danger, like we all would think. But then when they started bringing out the incense and doing interpretive dance for them, it was like, oh, okay, maybe we totally misjudged the situation, which is something they are very prone to do, misjudging a situation.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of made sense. And it ended up being a little of both.
Yes.
It was a nice balance of the two.
So what's interesting is we learn that Laszlo has slept around, not only with some of the witches, but possibly Nandor.
No, absolutely Nandor and Judith. Like, it was implied, like, this woman turns into a caricature of Nadia, like someone who reminded me more of a completely different actress whose name now escapes me. But the point is, it was anybody with dark hair,
right,
and a mild accent, you know. So it's like, oh, next thing you'll tell me that you slept with Nandor, and like the silence said everything.
There, you know what, the humor in this show, I love it. Once in a while it gets a little too ironic, a little bit too I don't know, on the nose. And one of those times was, you know, Naja complaining for 30 seconds. Wait, do you not see this is a different person? Like, it's funny, but it kind of goes on and on and on. The guys are like, no, can't tell.
Yeah, and that was when it was first happened. I thought it would be like, hey, oh no, you guys look totally the same, like trying to get out of it. But when it kept being pressed, I was like, oh, are they just like all that blind, like face blind, I guess? Because yeah, she did not look like Nadia at all.
Yeah. But what a funny concept is. Mm-hmm. The guys don't see it and you're like, come on. Really? Maybe, maybe not. Billie Jean is in our live chat, and she says, Nandor and Laszlo made the phrase, I go gay for you, come true. They already act like a married couple as much as him and Naja. And it's funny, I thought of Three's Company, you know, a sitcom from the 80s, but I think it's like this idea of what if we had vampires living in a house off of college campus? Forgetting the college part, but it's just, you know, a guy and a girl are married, and then we have some other single dudes that live there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
yeah, that's what it kind of the vibe. And those three in particular, obviously, are very closely like knit. More, you know, Colin Robinson is always the outsider because he's not from the old country.
Right.
He's more in place in current America than these three are. So they have that bond going for them.
Yeah. Colin is the awkward roommate that we've all had.
Mm-hmm.
The one that didn't come from a recommendation from a friend, like a Craigslist ad kind of.
He came at the house.
Or a Fiverr.
Oh, yes. And you know what? There's also the fact that they all drink blood, whereas he doesn't. He saps energy. But consider that the season one's episode 9 was all about the big vampire orgy. So this is just part of their culture.
Right.
Like the kind of free love, everybody's down to have sex with everybody else. But with Nadia and Laszlo, it's like, but us first, you know?
Yeah.
But everyone's invited at some point, it seems like.
Yeah. Now, Guillermo, who's basically doing his own thing, mm-hmm. realizes that when he comes back to the house and he sees Naja, the Naja doll, who mentions the invitation,
mm-hmm.
right? No, I'm sorry. Is this? No, I'm getting ahead of myself. The storylines are blurring to me.
No, you're right.
Yeah, yes. I am. I'm blurring Guillermo coming to the rescue in both episode 9 and 10.
That's the thing is, well, he comes to the rescue in this one too.
Yes,
he was with them from the beginning, but he's the one who found the way out of the escape room.
Right.
And he's the one who does the like multi-level marketing salesman pitch.
Right. Basically telling them, I can get you all the semen you want by calling it Memo's Men Milk.
I just love his like, now imagine if you will, or what, you know, what I'm proposing to you. He just used all those salesman tactics to
yes.
win them over. I just love that that's what saved the day was that salesman ploy.
Right. Right. And so it ends, Laszlo and Nandor go into a room together to finish each other off, basically. They're like, sure, why not? And then Guillermo chats with the witches familiar, the goat, about the shit work they have to do.
Which supports my theory. He didn't mention how long he had been a familiar, but he was like, I don't think they're ever going to turn me into a witch. And so I just feel like that's what it is for familiars across the board, is they never, ever get turned.
Yeah. This is us in a workspace feeling like we're never going to move away from our cubicle. We're never going to move up in ranks.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now let's move on to episode 10. This is Nouveau Théâtre des Vampires. See, I butchered that both in pronunciation and accent.
I won't even attempt it.
Awesome. This is the final episode of season 2. Nandor is stuck in his coffin, yells for Guillermo, who's not around. What I found interesting is that Nandor is both angry, but then he also is playful. He's scared of being too angry because he's like, I'm looking for you. And that was something I noticed is Nandor wants to be a dick, a jerk, but he really isn't that good at it because he knows that he's caused Guillermo to disappear.
I think he truly values Guillermo and wants him to be around. He likes Guillermo. He cares about him and wants him to be part of their family. But like I was saying earlier, they've got this old world mindset that he has to be the boss. It's Nandor the Relentless. He was a conqueror.
Right.
He has this reputation and this presence that he feels is a crucial part of his identity. So he's not willing to relinquish any power, and he's only used to barking orders. He's not used to being nice and giving people breaks and every other Sunday off or whatever.
Yeah,
so
It's hard to feel powerful when you're wearing a Jordan USA basketball jersey. Because
as much as he is an actual fan, I love that callback. The dream team.
That's right. So Guillermo finds that, there's a note that Nandor finds Guillermo's note that says sorry because Guillermo's moved back home.
Yeah. Yeah. And he only says he wasn't focused on his everyday duties. He was just letting his focus slip. And so now he's back home where he's wanted. And but he's doing the same stuff. He's solving all his mom's problems for her.
I know. And then without Guillermo, the house falls into disrepair. I love that there's dead bodies all over the floor that everyone trips on. Gosh. There's that pool of blood.
Colin Robinson coming in and slipping and doing that pratfall like just out of frame, I thought was hysterical. I loved it when it happened to him. I loved it when it came back with Guillermo stepping into the room. And I loved seeing Colin Robinson be like so pissed about this situation. Like everyone's like, oh no, we're so fine. We're great. We don't need him anymore. And Colin Robinson is stewing about everything. And it's it was such a great dynamic shift.
Right. And we're taken back to the idea that nobody really cares about Guillermo because they're trying to find him by trying to recall information. And all they can remember is his first name.
Yeah. It's great. It's a testament. Like they finally realize how important Guillermo was to them. They don't know how to do their laundry. They don't know how to do the simple function of finding him. Like they need him for everything. They need him for to get him even.
Yeah. So the big thing in this is that the vampires, Staten Island vampires, are invited invited to the theater this once every 5 year U.S. tour. I was surprised because I'm thinking it's once every millennium, once every 5,000 years. They're like, no, every 5 years they do a tour, kind of like Circus Vargas or some other traveling show that seems to pop up in our towns all the time.
Yeah, I don't go to a whole lot of French theater, and the Cirque shows that I've been to have been in one place. They don't tour, so this is all a very new thing for me. I would have fallen for the trap too, because I'd have been like, oh, it's like a touring Broadway company, but even more fancy.
Right. But of course it was Guillermo who spotted the logo for the Vampiric Council on there and said, uh-oh, I have to go rescue them again. There's something endearing to Guillermo about these vampires that he can't give them up.
Yeah, it's one thing to like be mad at your boss and walk out on your job. It's another thing to want them to be killed. And like you were saying earlier, as much as he is a vampire hunter at heart, and as much as he's fed up with being familiar, he still cares about being a vampire, and thus the vampire community, and especially the ones that he's been living with for 10 years. Like, it's not a bond he's going to just sever.
Right.
Like, Nandor genuinely cares about him, though he won't admit it, and I feel it's the same way with Guillermo.
Yeah. Everyone cares, but just not enough to actually... Everyone has life goals, but nobody has enough willpower to actually succeed at them. So what's interesting is Nandor and Laszlo and Naja are tricked into coming to this show because the Vampire Council wants to kill them for all of the vampire slayings that Guillermo actually did. And Nandor, when he's finally realized, well, there's two things. One, during this show, all they're doing is ragging on the production, ragging on the actors playing them, and ragging on the accuracy.
Yeah, I love their. It was like they were treating it like it reminded me of the Ember Island players from Avatar: The Last Airbender, where they're seeing themselves portrayed on stage and doing, in this case, horrible things. And they're just like, I don't dance like that. Like, that's your hot take, the choreography? That's what upsets them. They've walked into a trap, and they're just upset about how the community at large is seeing them.
But right.
Not for the big picture.
Right. And the other thing is, under pressure, Nandor gives up Guillermo, blames it on him. It's all his fault.
Yes, he did, because it's true.
Yes.
But he also tried to convince them that Guillermo was dead so that they wouldn't seek revenge on him. So it was he's kind of straddling the fence there. He's doing his thing where, like, you know, he doesn't want his reputation to go sour and he wants to remain a powerful vampire, but he does care for Guillermo to some extent. Yeah, it wasn't the best thing he could have done, but it wasn't the worst either.
This might be our one potential fisticuffs of the whole season, is, but not by a lot. I think that Nandor really was just trying to wiggle his way out, and he would have blamed Guillermo and maybe felt sorry for Guillermo if Guillermo died, but would have just gone on and complained about life.
Yeah, but the fact he was like, and it's okay, I killed him and buried him and I ripped off his arms and his legs and he's in the backyard. Like, he was just trying, it's okay now, you guys don't have to do anything. He sold him out and threw him under the bus, but he threw him under the bus, but he gave him a helmet. Like, that's what he didn't completely throw him under the bus.
Okay.
But
all right.
Yeah. He
mostly. So of course Guillermo is to come down. And then I love that. I love the montage with the rock music where Guillermo.
Wait. Before we get into that, can we please talk about the dumb theater? I loved seeing all of their, like revisiting the two seasons of the show portrayed in this silent, interpretive dance with theatrical special effects.
Yes.
I love that they had like an encore scene planned in case the familiar was brought up. Like, it wasn't part of the show, but if they bring up that other character, we got him waiting in the wings.
Yes.
The whole thing was a treat. I loved like I said, the Empire of the Players kind of thing. It was revisiting the show up to this point in a fun new way. And I'd also like to think, I think when they brought out the little gizmo to fight the vampire, I like to believe that was supposed to be Jim the vampire, just as a fun nod for the fans.
Oh.
He had the ponytail.
So. Interesting. I didn't think about that.
I'm probably wrong. I'm sure no one thought that, but yeah. I'd like to think it was for Mark Hamill.
That's funny. It's, you know, it makes me think of like something like Hamilton. Imagine going to Hamilton and being with your parents or grandparents and all they're doing is complaining about the accuracy and why are they singing all of this, you know, just coming up with every excuse why it's not a good show.
Yeah, we don't laugh like that. Oh, they're using their head as a beach ball. Just that, that's the little things. I thought it was a delightful way to revisit the show, rhyme schemes and all.
Yeah. So what did you think of Guillermo's montage? The rock music.
So badass.
It was.
Yeah. One of our fans says that Guillermo was the best boy this season, and he absolutely was.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good cinnamon roll, good soul, trying to do the right thing. But then when push came to shove, and like he had to defend his own honor, I guess.
Yeah.
He dropped from the rafters and cleaned house. It was amazing. Very exciting to watch. But I watched it again recently and realized some of the attacks he does are brutal. Brutal. He forced holy water down a guy's throat.
Right. Yeah. So, which kind of lends to the credibility that he's a serious vampire killer. He's not like, I'm just trying to save my friends. That's his background. It's innate. It's in him.
If you take out a theater full of vampires, and not just vampires, but the heavy hitters that everyone was pointing out, like Pamela, the heavy hitters were there. And you can't do that by accident.
Pamela in her business attire.
Guillermo, unless some of them ran out the door, which I don't think they did because they were all coming from, and they had him surrounded at multiple points.
Right.
And he came out on top, covered in vampire blood. He pronounced himself, I am Guillermo de la Cruz, like
vampire slayer.
He is fully realized now. There's no way he can assume it's accidental. Even if he wasn't a Van Helsing at this point, he's still a vampire slayer.
Right. So, and then of course, Nandor at the end, rather than saying thank you, it's I don't care who the F you are, we had to pick up our own laundry.
He's so mad.
Why don't we, before we do special segments or news, why don't we jump into a season three predictions. And I want to start that off by first saying hello to No Eyes Bunny, who just who jumped in. But Billy Jean says, do you think Guillermo will go back to being a familiar, or will he become a full-on vampire slayer? And that's what I'm wondering. What do you think, Kevin, for next season?
That's the question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to watch Guillermo's character from here, because as you mentioned, he still has a love of vampires and wants to be a vampire. And as much as he's been living that with 10 years, I feel like he's kind of caught up to being a fully realized vampire slayer, and they're equally matched. So he's going to be torn right down the middle as to where he wants to go in his life. I think it's plausible that he will remain with the house as their bodyguard. Mm. They will continue to treat him like a familiar, and he kind of, I'm assuming he will be doing things for them out of habit, but maybe not as much as he used to.
Right.
And it's going to be a twist on their old dynamic where he does things for them, but now it's a little more specialized.
Right.
What do you say?
I kind of wonder, well, what else can they do now? Now that, you know, the Guillermo dynamic, you know, we've explored that. Excuse me. His low status as a familiar, his high status as a vampire killer. And then we've got the rest of the household who's just kind of mired in their own stupidity and beliefs and their ways. I wonder if they would introduce another main character for the season that maybe would be like a common enemy.
Well, so Billy Jean actually just pointed out that Vladislav, who is no character who is leading this event and who's from the original movie, part of the Vampire Council, he most likely escaped from the whole sling. And I don't think Guillermo did get him. So they're still out there. I mean, the heavy hitters were in the room, but it's, you know, oh God, Nick Kroll's character is still out there. The whole world at large with the witches and the zombies, and like, it's all still there.
Right.
So there was a huge dent put in the vampire community of New York. But there's still plenty of other vampires out in the world, and they are probably going to be even more aware of our Staten Island group.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jenna came back, because I wonder what she's doing, and maybe she'll be Guillermo's foil as a new vampire trying to kill a slayer.
Interesting. Kind of like a procedural, like a cop show.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
I'll say, what I loved about episode 9 was seeing the group in the Room of Many Doors, and like this casual group that we kind of just wax on and off with everyday little annoyances, having to deal with like the kind of stuff you see in blockbuster mind-bending horror films.
Right.
Like just the big ridiculous nonsense. So yeah, if this group has to go through like a cop procedural, I think that'd be entertaining as hell.
That would be. That would be a lot of fun. Anything else before we go to news?
No, not really. I don't know how they're going to keep this dynamic going. I yearn to see what happens in the very next 5 minutes of where we left off, where Guillermo's covered in blood and Nandor's yelling at him about laundry. Like, are they going to invite him back? Would he go back? Are they going to keep his secret? Is he going to keep theirs? Like, I mean, there's so much rich stuff to expect in season 3. But I'm keeping in mind, this isn't that kind of show. Like I just said, it's not the big blockbuster thing. It's all like casual jokes around the house and little annoyances. So it's just, oh man, the possibilities.
Right. All right. Well, with that, let's go to news.
All right. So I just talked about how excited I am for season 3. And I'm sure in the back of everyone's mind, they're like going, but when are they going to film it? Because everything's closed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Comic-Con was canceled this year. And if you're watching our program.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Like, like everything else, except for New Zealand's rugby team, it's been canceled. And if you're watching the show, you already know what Comic-Con is, but you might not know about Comic-Con at home, which is essentially going to be this like virtual simulcast kind of version of Comic-Con. So I don't know how one attends. I know that like my ticket came back, and so I you don't have to like buy your way in, I'm sure.
Right.
But it's going to be streamed, and there will be a virtual panel for What We Do in the Shadows, which has been renewed for a third season. So I'm sure that's going to come up. The panel is going to be July 25th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's going to have Matt, Natasha, Kevin, Mark, Harvey, all talking about the series, and it's going to be moderated by our zombie friend, Haley Joel Osment.
Wonderful. So that's awesome. That's,
yeah. FX is going to have a presence at this virtual Comic-Con, and one of their big properties that they're letting everybody in on is What We Do in the Shadows Season 3.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So special segment. Throughout this whole series, I've been doing vampire movies, some vampire TV. Now I want to do vampire-themed video games.
Ooh. Okay.
I have the name of a game series in my mind. When I say vampire video games, does something jump out at you, Kevin?
Castlevania?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Castlevania. So I'm taking this off from Wikipedia. So Castlevania goes back to 1986.
Wow.
Series focuses on a war between the Belmont family and Dracula. Dracula is resurrected every 100 years. Hold on, where did my notes just go? And the Belmonts must defeat him before he unleashes his wrath on the world. So that's probably one of the more popular ones. But I picked out a few other ones just because they were interesting. For example, the list goes back to 1981. There was a game called The Count. It was a text adventure. And the player has been sent to defeat Count Dracula by the local villagers. I don't know, Kevin, did you ever play any of the text-only games, text adventures?
No, I had an Atari. So I went back to like the days of Pong.
Okay.
But I don't think I ever went prior there. I never had a Commodore 64, and I'm trying to think of the computer games I had. I don't think any of them were purely text-based.
Right, okay. So, right, if you grew up with an Apple II, or you grew up with an Atari 400 or 800 or a Commodore PET or a TI-99 or, oh my gosh, a TRS-80, we called it a Trash 80. It was an all-in-one black TV screen with like 5 1/4 drives. I am more than happy to date myself because I remember being in junior high and taking a class. And all we tried to do was make dumb things, you know, to code in BASIC. 10, print, Johnny is a dork, 20, go to 10. And then just, you'd be so amazed at the simple things you could do. So when there were games that you could play on these computer systems, it was so amazing. And so text adventures might be, as a description is, you're in a room. There's a door on your right, and there's a desk on your left, and there's a question mark. And then you have to type in door or right or left.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sometimes the program would only know one or two commands. Sometimes it would know a few commands, but then you would say desk. And then it would say, you're looking at a desk. There are three drawers, and on top is a book.
Yeah, it's kind of like a choose your own adventure, but like every step of the way.
Yes, yeah. Okay. So those were so much fun. In 1986, the Sega Master System, one of the earlier post Atari console systems, had a game called Ghost House. We had something from 1987 for the Commodore 64. I've never heard of it. The Astonishing Adventures of Mr. Weems and the She-Vampires. Which is interesting. Haven't heard of that. The character has entered the mansion of the great She-Vampire, must defeat her before he is drained of blood. Likened to Gauntlet. Gauntlet, I remember, was an NES game back from the day.
I've heard of it. I don't know it.
And then PlayStation had Countdown Vampires in 1999, a game based off the movie From Dusk Till Dawn, 2001, a Windows first-person shooter.
Wow.
And so there are so many. I mean, there's so many more on this list I didn't cover.
So something kind of interesting, but the majority of these games are You're the Slayer. Is that correct?
Yes. It would seem like most of these You're the Slayer.
That's interesting because Guillermo fully realizes the Slayer, whereas every other episode we've talked about and you brought up vampire stuff, it's the majority of vampire culture in popular media is pro-vampire. Like you follow the vampires and you meet the coven, or you meet the Dracula, and they're the protagonist in some sense.
Right.
It's rare you see movies about Van Helsing or vampire slaying, but in the video game world, it's totally the opposite.
Right. That's cool. Oh yeah, that's a very good point. So if you have a favorite vampire themed video game that you used to play or love playing now, put them in the comments below. We appreciate so much the people that have been on chat. Thank you, Billy Jean, for being a part of the show for this season. Everybody, thank you so much. You can leave stuff below, leave in comments below these YouTube videos. If you are listening to our podcast, give us 5-star review. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star. Let us know that you enjoy these, and so we can keep creating these for your favorite show. Kevin, I think by the finger up to the mouth, you have something you want to add.
Yes, I forgot when you asked me if there was anything else to add. Someone in the chat brought up the question, did Nadja get killed by Black Peter when he ate everything in the house?
Oh.
I am worried that's what happened. But we'll have to wait and see in season 3.
Oh, God. Okay. I hope not. I hope she's still around. Maybe broken a little bit, but I hope she's... we both hope that she had more in the show. She's appeared a couple times.
Yeah. And she's great. I love everything she just said to Guillermo as he ran out the door, like, you're probably going to fail.
she's snarkier than the real Nadja, which is what I love. And I think that's what Nadja loves about her, that they're gal pals.
Yeah, they can't get rid of her.
All right, well, I think we already did predictions, right?
Yep.
When we talked before. So, Kevin, I hate to end the show, but where can we find you if we want to talk more about what we do in the shadows?
Yeah, I hate to end the show, too. This has been a fantastic season, and the more that we've covered it, the more I've seen my friends come out of the woodwork and just express how much they've enjoyed this season. I reminded people on Twitter that we were coming back to wrap our finale tonight, and just someone responded back with just how amazing season 2 was.
Yeah.
So I'm still up for talking about it. And if you want to do that, you can find me on Twitter at Kevin Allen Says and Instagram at Kevin Allen Graham.
Perfect. And you can find me on Instagram at Lauren Kling. Kevin, are there any other AfterBuzz shows you're currently working on?
No. I've decided to watch other programs and stuff that's come out before. Like I just finished Watchmen. I cannot recommend that show enough.
Now, did you read the graphic novel?
I did. And if you weren't aware, it's more in line with the graphic novel than it is the Zack Snyder film.
Okay.
While still kind of having that same aesthetic.
Now, but I haven't. And so what I've heard is if you haven't followed the graphic novels, you may not get it. But I'm still going to try it.
It would help. But the show is its own thing. You'll understand it, you'll appreciate it, it'll be a richer experience for you, but it's not that you'll be completely in the dark, because most of the in the dark I was feeling watching the show was just good television writing about what's happening in this current premise.
Got it.
But it's a great piece to understand a lot of the Black Lives Matter movement right now, to understand American history, and it's just a fantastic show. I just finished that, and now that I've done that, I'm going to be looking for more programming with the same mindset.
Wonderful. And I am doing the show for HBO's Perry Mason.
Oh, cool.
Which is cool because it harkens back to 1930s Hollywood in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always fascinated with seeing my hometown, what it looked like back then. I'm a tour guide here in Hollywood and Los Angeles, and so we have gone around some of the places that they highlight, like Angel's Flight. And it's cool to be able to see them kind of recreate these things of what they look like back then. So it's a great show. I love Matthew Rhys, who is on The Americans. And so that's one of the things that, and John Lithgow is in it. It's an amazing show. So I definitely recommend that. Thank you, No Eyes Bunny. Thank you, Billie Jean 24. Thank you to Bree, who's been producing the show. Thank you to the universe and to everyone who produces the show's name escapes my brain.
What we do in the shadows. I know we're caught up in all these other shows that are nothing like What We Do in the Shadows, because this show, What We Do in the Shadows, is so immensely unique. And you ask what if I'm watching anything else, there's nothing to replace What We Do in the Shadows. So I'm just going to wait till next year.
Well, there's the original movie. It might be time to revisit that.
Okay.
So, all right. Okay. From all of us at AfterBuzz, Kevin, thank you so much. I am Lauren. Goodbye, everybody.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.